I want to begin with a little history lesson. And being one who struggled staying awake in history class, because it was just about memorization, I want you to stay awake. The things that I remembered, though, always had more than just some memorization work, some date. There needed to be meaning behind it, and then those things meant something, and so then I would hold on to that. I want to talk about looking back to both the time in the Old Testament where the Israelites had judges and then later kings, because I want to talk about the differences in that, because I found made a connection to those theological differences in today's gospel. And so I want to start there. Judges began after the Exodus. It was after Joshua died. That was really a time period around 1375 before the Common Era. This was from that point moving forward. There were about 8 years where the Israelites, they were floundering a little bit. They didn't have leadership. Moses was gone. Joshua was gone. And they were reverting back to things of days gone by. We know how easy it was for them. I mean, Moses disappeared for how many days before they were making a golden calf already? They needed something. And so here they were, this 8 years, they were reverting back. They would abandon God. They were renouncing God because some hardship came and they felt God was punishing them, until they hit rock bottom, which often in our lives we have to hit something like that before we can make a change in our life. And so that's when the Israelites began crying out again to the Lord for rescue and for safety and security again. And so they hit rock bottom, and then they remember, and they cry out to God. We're the same way, really, in our lives and in the covenants that we have with God. It's very secular. God makes a covenant. We love God. We mess up. We feel either we're abandoning or God's abandoning, but not really. And then God, we reconcile, God forgives us, and it starts over again. I mean, that's just kind of how our life works. Same for them. And so after those first 8 years, they needed some type of leadership. And so there were judges that were formed. Now, this isn't a judicial type of leadership. They really were leaders that God raised up, that brought it to the people, whatever their need was. And that judge took care of things. And so they were a leader. They were seen as someone who would guide them and take care of the problem, often a military leader, because often that's what was going on that they needed. But it wasn't judicial in that sense. And there were about 12 to 15 judges during that period, depending on who lists, you know, you pull them from scriptures, and some say, yep, they were a judge, and others say, no, that they weren't. But so around 12 or 15 of them. And so the thing about the judges, theologically, was that God raised them up for them. And so during that time, and then they would go away, and then at time a need again, and God would raise up another judge. And so they relied on God, trusted in God to give them what they needed and who they needed in their life to make whatever was going on bearable or get them through it. So it was a time of theological trusting. Faith was, they might not have used that word, I don't know, but it's faith. It's knowing that God's going to raise up somebody to help us through what struggles are. Now, this wasn't a thing of lineage, so it wasn't like the judge And then that one dies and the son becomes now the leader. It wasn't like that. Often different tribes. This judge was from that tribe, and the next time it was from a different tribe. However it worked out, but it wasn't a lineage thing. Some of these judges were so powerful in the way that they led and successful that they were deemed as a deliverer and even savior as well. Those words were used, same kind of names that were later used for Jesus. So the time of the judges ended, but it ended out of a response to fear. The Israelites were being threatened by the Philistines and the Ammonites. That will not be on the test. I won't make you remember those. But the important thing is that they were being threatened. And when people feel threatened, they're grasping for straws, right? They need some type of security that they're missing in their life. And so they wanted... Samuel was the last judge. They go to Samuel. All the elders of the nations go. And they say that they want a king like all the other nations. They all had kings. And these kings ruled as kings rule, with strong arm power, authority, where the judges weren't like that. They were, God lifted up to help with the situation, and then they kind of slipped away. Kings, they needed it in their life. Well, Samuel, he knew what power did. And he tried to actually work it out to where they didn't have the same kind of power as a king, but they would be able to negotiate with kings and lead in a certain way. It didn't work out, even though that's how he wanted it. But God had to follow through with that. And so he has Samuel anoint Saul. Saul became the first king. And that was in 1051. And so there was a time. Now, the entire nation is one of the Israelites. That only lasted for three kings. And so within three kings, from Saul, David, and Solomon, it ended because they split up. Kings get power. Groups like, I don't like what you're doing, and you're treating some better than others. So eight of the tribes stayed and went north. And that became the kingdom of Israel. And two of them stayed in the south, and that was the kingdom of Judah. They had their own kings. And it really didn't go well for them. There's 20 listed from the north and 20 listed from the south as kings that had ruled. And I'll talk about how well that turned out in a little bit. So you had judges, right, who God raised up and helped in the situation. Then you had kings. And the king theology is you didn't have to worry. The king anointed God anointed them as king. God knows what God's doing, and then we just let it go because it's going to go to the son until the son kills that brother, and then that brother takes over. And you know how that works. Power, it was not a good thing. But the people could just sit back. God anointed him as king, so it's out of our hands. And so they didn't have to engage in that. They didn't have to have trust, really, in God, that God would raise it up when they needed it. It was a different type of understanding and relationship with God. Now, last week, if you were here, I mentioned how our gospel was split up. There was the little beginning, and then it got chopped off, and there was a whole bunch of stuff missing, and then we reconnected back at the end. Today, we get that chunk, but not from Mark, because we're in the Gospel of Mark in year B. We get it from the Gospel of John. John doesn't have his own year, A, B, and C, so John gets thrown in here and there all of a sudden, all throughout the year, and here's one of those sections where what actually happens within the feeding of the 5,000, and the walking on water is a chunk that was in Mark, so it actually does, the theology and the story is a little different in both of those. I actually like Mark a little better for a couple of reasons, but they cut that out, and today we get John's version of feeding of the 5,000. as happened, and we keep hearing over and over again, as Jesus went about, the crowds were being drawn to him. Today it says because of what Jesus was doing in healing the sick. And so these crowds were falling. So it's not just that all of those healing things that needed to happen, Jesus was doing. And they had to be, they were just drawn. They needed that. They needed somebody to raise up to help them get through. And what Jesus brought them was just something they couldn't deny. And it spread. And the crowds were crazy. And Jesus dealt with that in a variety of different ways. In today's gospel, in John, the boy is the one who actually starts off the loaves and the fishes. 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Now, I have to ask, and maybe you know, still rhetorical, don't get me off track. Why did the boy have the food? I mean, that's a legitimate question, and the answer would really be that that boy was the keeper of the food. That was his job for the family unit when they traveled, whoever was there. And so they all had different duties, and that would have been his. He had one job, to protect that food, to hold on to it. He didn't want to mess that up, because that was going to be the nourishment for his family. He would not have given it up. That just really wouldn't have happened. Now, which makes me wonder, did Jesus go strong-arm the kid out of his bread and fish? Would not made for a good story, would not look good on him or us, so let's scrap that one, right? And so how would Andrew even know that the boy had food? Because they didn't flaunt that they had food. It was protected, it was in different satchels. They did not tell people, the world, I have food, because not everybody was nice and some people would take it. And so how did he know? I can't help but think that this boy actually bought into Jesus, actually was drawn there with his family, not because he was being drug along like kids are to different things, that he wanted to be there. That he was experiencing something in Jesus that he needed in his life. Some type of healing, something to reach out and to follow, to connect with. And maybe, just maybe, this boy trusted Jesus enough, connected enough, to offer what he had to Jesus. Everything he had, that would have been it. Kid had one job. What was the reaction of his family at the beginning of that? I mean, I don't know, but he had to produce it. It had to have come from him to do that. What was their response after being fed? Here they have been fed in a way that they haven't been fed. Their tummies are full. They got to, nobody was without. Everybody ate. And there were, as in all of those stories, baskets left over. They're experiencing not only that full belly, but what just happened. They can't believe it. But they experienced it. They can't explain it. But it fed them spiritually as well. Well, they want that because they've gone so long without that. They don't have any direction. They're starving. They're being overtaxed. All of the bad things that we know were going on and the oppression that was going on. And all of a sudden, they're both spiritually and physically fed. They want that every day. And so what do? This guy has given it to them. We want it every day. Let's make him a king. Says they wanted to make him a king. And Jesus knows what happens when earthly become king. The power, the corruption. All throughout the Gospels, it was Jesus saying, no, my Father, I'm going to give that power away. He always points it to where it belongs, not him, to God. And so he doesn't want anything to do with this, and so they scoot off and don't allow him to be forced into being deemed the king. Because out of those 40 kings, 20 north, 20 south, only 8 are described as good. 8 out of 40. Those aren't very good odds. And out of the 32 that were left, 20 of those were actually from the north. Okay, they're the ones that broke away. Didn't like it. They wanted to do it their way, and they broke off. Of course, it was probably good because Manasseh was down there and he wasn't doing very good things. He really wasn't. He was one of the bad ones. And so they were running from that, but they ran off. All 20 of theirs were bad. And out of those, when they list about their character and what they were known for, not only bad, some of them were listed as very bad. Some of them are listed as murderers. And some, their description is very wicked. Power out of the south, they had all the rest of them. They were just bad. They didn't have very bads for whatever reason, and didn't seem to have any wicked ones down there either. But out of those 40, only 8 were good. Kings, when they get that power, they want it their way. Doesn't matter if they go to war, which they battled against each other. The tribes were just all this inner turmoil. That's the stuff that was going on. But we know that Jesus gave that power where it belonged. Now, in our lives today, where do we give power? Who has power over us? Now, sometimes it's a person that we give authority to over us. It could be a preacher, man. Instead of being in relationship, some are all authoritative. Well, the preacher said it, so it must, I've got to, do that. Or it could be a family member. Could be a boss, all kinds of things within our lives, there's authority over us, and sometimes we give too much power to them to allow that to happen. Now, there's consequences, of course, when we stand up for it, which is what Jesus was standing up against, too, and his consequences were pretty severe. But we allow other things to have power over us. So how do we respond? Sometimes we just give in. Sometimes we believe every word they say, or turn to our personal caves and hide out, and that becomes our power. Here it is. We're just going to be safe in here. We're going to hide out, not deal with anything. Sometimes we put up shields, all kinds of different shields, from fake personalities. We become not like ourselves. We create something else to try to protect it. Sometimes those shields are, we have such an overabundance, we can just hide behind our overabundance and keep things between us and whatever that power is. That becomes a power in itself. Drugs and alcohol, I mean, really, the list goes on and on of what we can give authority and power to in our lives. How do we turn our lives over to God on a daily basis? Do we trust that God will give us what we need when we need it? Kind of like the judges of old. It requires faith. And it also requires, well, it may not turn up like we want it to. It may not look like we want it to. God may show up in your neighbor. It may show up a complete stranger. It may show up on a line of poetry that you read, or a story in a book, or something in a movie. God communicates with us and gives us what we need to get us through if we pay attention. But it's through those relationships. So do we trust it like the judges of old and they work that way, or do we not? Or do we just want to turn it over and not have to even engage and be in relationship with God? There's something about that boy that I can't let go of. Boy who experienced Jesus in such a way that he would risk everything to know that what Jesus would do with that would be the right thing. To turn over everything you have to feed all who were there. Amen.